This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right!
Yeah, you know exactly what the fuck we're talking about. We are horrible, we're terrible, we're foul-mouthed, immature. But you love listening to us. And this is episode 196 of The Lotus Effect, which we have provisionally titled The Devil Just Showed Up. And by the fact that we're starting about a half hour late from what we usually do, yeah, I think that's a pretty adequate statement for the way that yours truly was feeling, especially since, you know, the whole reason that anyways, doesn't matter why we got here, we're here. And at the end of the day, the show is made up, the content doesn't matter, and I'm Phoenix.
Bang bang Niner gang. Bang bang Niner gang.
Who are we?
Fuck the Seahawks.
Yeah, that too. I'm Phone Boy, and yes, the Niners did come in and beat Seattle in Seattle last week, and the gridiron of the NFL. Although we'll see how the Niners do the rest of the season, because
by a fucking miracle catch,
yes,
that
which,
had
which,
no
by,
business
by,
being
which,
caught.
By, which, by the way, was being compared to Joe Montana's pass to Dwight Clark. The famous
you talking
one.
About the pick at the stick?
No. I'm talking about the catch.
Oh, the catch.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah, it looked a lot like that, too. As a Niners fan.
It was absolutely fucking amazing. I watched it on the replay. Like we said, the kid had no business catching that fucking ball at all. But we took the W, and we'll keep taking the W, just like the Vols who are taking on the Georgia Bullshits, I mean Bulldogs, at Neyland Stadium today. So we would like to wish good luck to them. Go Vols! And beat them ugly fat dogs. And also, we would like to welcome our Apple Podcasts and Spotify listeners and say thank you. And if you enjoy the bullshit you've already started listening to, well, hit the subscribe button so we know that you're out there sending the act back, which we ask you to all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, wow, yeah, it's football season, which means I get to freak out at the television again.
Oh, you mean like me when I almost flipped the love seat at the Super Bowl? Yeah, we're not talking about that. Yeah. But I think at this point, we really do need to freak out just the tiniest bit, you know, because that's what we do.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, you are freaking out, man. And I guess the rest of us are, too, especially because we were late. Maybe a few people got worried we weren't going to do a show. But, yep, here we are, loud, proud, obnoxious, and strong. And we know that the Lotus affects everyone differently. So however or wherever it is affecting you today, we would love to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
Yeah, it takes more than just a dollar to run this shit show, but at the same point in time, you know we put a lot of time into doing the show, and even though we peak and tweak things consistently, we still run on the 3T value for value model, time, talent, and treasure. We know you really don't have a lot of money to spend, especially because everybody's bitching about the current tariffs that 47 put in place. But if you do have a couple extra cents that you would like to donate to this shit show that you're listening to, you can, of course, go to lotuseffect.show and click the green We Like Money button. Send us a little bit of your fiat fund coupons. It does help us to keep this show on the air. Or, you know, if you don't want us to keep the show on the air, then don't donate and go fuck yourself. No, I'm just kidding. The other way that you can do it is we do have Cash App. It's $$TheLotusEffect33. So if you are like us and you use Cash App, because I find it to be a good platform. Yes, it is much like all the other electronic platforms. It's hella insecure. But then again, at the same time, if you're smart enough not to keep all your fucking fiat in one place, they can't necessarily get it all if you get your Cash App hacked or whatever. But we're not talking about that today. Nope. Instead, we're talking about me beating the hell out of my co-host for coughing through my noise gate, and also about the fact that you can go to lotuseffect.shop, which is our merch store where we have all our brand feces smeared all over the products. And we will soon have AIisEvil.org products online. We do not yet. Also, 2.5 bends. We don't have all that set up yet. I'm a little busy, don't you know? But if you do want to get your hands on some Lotus Effect, Studio 33, Rideshare Radio, if you want to get some of that merch, then definitely.
I actually got to use the Rideshare Radio logo last night. Because,
did you?
Yeah, because we actually did a real Rideshare Radio last night.
We did. I assure you, I worked so blessed late last night. But it was so much fun. OMG had just the best blast. But irrelevant, we'll talk about that in the Toast and Jam segment. Yes. Like I said, we know you may not have the scratch to send us your fiat fund coupons. You may not have the scratch because the merch in lotuseffect.shop is kind of pricey. We know. You can also do a one-time or recurring donation through the site, which most people don't. And that's okay because I don't think I would either. But the thing that matters the most to us is not necessarily the money. It is definitely about sending the act back. We've been saying it for a good amount of time. Let us know that you are listening. It only takes a minute or two. And first of all, you hear me talking about it a lot lately. Subscribe to the podcast. Let us know. We have a recent subscription to the other show that I do, kind of my pet product project. Wow, words are hard. I shouldn't use words. Yeah. But the funny thing about murder dot show is actually my little pet project where I talk about serial killers and true crime. So if you're all about that, and I add a little bit of blue humor in. So I actually have someone who subscribed on Spotify. So whoever you are, thank you out there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really appreciate that. But like I said, the way to send the act back, let us know that you're listening. You can subscribe to the podcast or, okay, if you're not on Spotify, you're not an Apple Cult member, any podcast app that can, you can get an RSS feed into it. Yeah, you can subscribe to our podcast. Now, of course, you hear us talking about this massive dong, and we call it
Mastodon.
And because it is massive, because if it's a massive dong, it's
mine. That's right. And even though it's not yours, speaking of massive dongs, it is where you can get a hold of us, the Mastodon, a.k.a. the Massive Dong. He is at phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. I'm at Phoenix, P-H-E-O-N-I-X, at lotuseffect.social. We both, he checks it more than I do because I'm a very busy gal. You can also send email. I don't give a fuck at lotuseffect.show. Real email address really is monitored by myself. Nobody ever uses it. Come on, guys. Even if it's just to say, ha-ha, great address, send us an email. Let us know that you are listening. Tell us you love us. Tell us you hate us. Tell us something. You can also, of course, send snail mail if you need the physical address. Let us know in the back channel, and we'll get it for you. The thing that means the most to me, you hear us break fourth wall a lot, join the chat. We love having our listeners in our chat. We do Rideshare Radio and 2.5 bends Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. Now, those are alternating. One week we will have Rideshare Radio like we did this week. Then next week will be 2.5 bends with myself, Phoneboy, and Sir Ryan Bemrose, one of the biggest smartasses that we know and also an extremely intelligent individual in the tech industry. And of course, join us during this shit show, Lotus Effect, or during the after party, which is Studio 33, not to be confused with the after party. I thank you. that, of course, we start this at 5 Eastern, 4 Central on Saturdays. And hopefully we have some new listeners, because I had a few riders, which I'll talk about during Rideshare, that I gave ducks to. As you know, one of our big marketing things that we're doing is the ducks with the QR code on them to advertise the show. And from what I understand, the website that is set up that is attached to that QR code is pretty nice. It's getting a lot of positive feedback.
Well, it's Lotus. Yeah, it's just pointing to lotuseffect.show. It's nothing.
I don't know. Apparently, it's more than that. We'll talk about it behind the mic, but I have had several people who scan the code and are amazed at how beautiful the website looks. So if you want to know what the fuck we're talking about, if you've never heard of this, go to lotuseffect.show, check out the website. And also, if you want to be part of the trolling, all you have to do is go to lotuseffect.chat, and all the details on how to do that are located there. Now, one other way that you can interact with us and give us feedback is to call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, that line must be boozy, because Google Voice is who answers it, and boy, those transcript mangles are something of legend, and they often become candidates for a show title. So one of the reasons, other than to give us feedback on why you're calling 253-237-3321, is to weigh in on the topic that we put out for the week. Now, you heard me talk about it before we went on air, so if you weren't listening live, A, shame on you, but B, I'll repeat it for those who are slower in the class. Our weigh-in topic today, we want to know what your favorite end-of-summer activity is. So give us a call at 253-237-3321 and let us know the answer to that weigh-in topic. You can also weigh in on any other topics we've had. Last week, we wanted to know what was on your grill, inspired by Sir Bemrose. Not a lot of people were worried about the grill, as it was pointed out to me by one of the faithful pedalheads. It's fall. We're not putting shit on the grill. We're putting the shit away. I said, yeah, I understand. Like, you're not like us. We grill year-round here at the Lotus Effect in Casa Lotus.
And we smoke year-round. It doesn't matter. There can be snow out in the ground. We'll fucking be smoking out there.
Yeah, are you sure we're still talking about meat, though? Hell! Anyway. However, now that we have explained to you all the things that this show is about, we think that you should take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it!
Yeah, but I'll tell you, we ain't taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
Yeah, we ain't taking shit from anybody anymore, that's all I'm saying.
That's right. In case you didn't notice, with how this show started, the shit ends here. The buck stops in Washington, and the bullshit stops about 5 feet from the door. Don't bring your shit to our door, don't bring your shit to our chat, don't bring your shit to our show. Be respectful. Do not be racist. Do not be anti-Semitic. You know, we talk about the fact that we don't find ourselves to be prejudiced. We hate everyone equally. We're equal opportunity shit stirrers. So, but in all seriousness, we don't look upon other races, creeds, religions, whatever. Like, we don't fucking care what you do, what color you are. Just be a good human being. We judge you by your character, not where you come from, or the color of your skin. Yeah, and
I'm thinking our drill sergeant saying, yes, I hate you all equally.
Oh,
no, we
yeah.
don't hate. We
wish
we,
I had that on hand.
Yeah. Here you are all equally.
Yeah, you are equally worthless.
We love you all, though.
That's right. We do. And honestly, Leslie Nielsen has some advice.
Yes, he does. And it goes something like this.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
That's right. They're counting on us to get it right and to always be true to who we are. So with that, we're going to slide effortlessly into our health segment, which is never, ever, ever.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Oh, well, this is not brought to you by Pfizer, but it is an oil question. This is one of those things you might see in the store. What about cold pressed sunflower oil? Is it actually healthy?
So the Hateful Eight are the corn, canola, cottonseed, soy, sunflower, safflower. Those are the six you really need to memorize, actually, because those six are on ingredients when you're going grocery shopping. They're going to be listed. The grocery store products don't yet have much of the other two. These other two, rice bran and grapeseed, those are mostly in restaurants, along with the Hateful Eight in restaurants.
Yeah, so that was Dr. Kate Shanahan. We've talked about her in the past, and she recently posted an article on her website on a question she gets all the time. Well, what about sunflower oil? Is it healthy? And I thought I heard her say sunflower oil in the list, and here's the TLDR she gives on this.
I believe she said sunflower and safflower.
Right. So here's what she says about it. Cold pressed sunflower oil can be okay if it's not refined, but. But it's not okay for cooking because of what it is. And the label may not tell you about refining. Now,
I have a question, Foamboy. On that subject, if it's not okay for cooking, then I'm going to be kind of a skeptic here. What's the point in using it? Quite frankly, as a culinary minded person, you need to be able to effortlessly switch from hot to cold application for that oil in what you're cooking. I don't want to have to worry about, oh, did I grab the sunflower or the olive oil when putting it in a pan? No, just cut it out. Before you even finish this story, I'm just going to tell the listeners, do not fuck with sunflower oil in your pantry. There is zero reason. When you have coconut oil, you have palm oil, you have avocado oil, and you have pure olive oil, that you can use. Sunflower doesn't need it. It brings nothing beneficial to the cabinet, folks.
Okay, so let me continue with the story here, because being cold pressed is a good sign, but it isn't the only factor to consider. Now, the other factor to consider is refining, and in fact, the refining industry is really the dark underbelly of the edible oil industry. It's so potentially harmful to our health that manufacturers don't want to tell us about it, and the law doesn't require them to do so.
Yeah, remember that the FDA has that thing called GRAS, generally regarded as safe, of which they literally let the fox run the hen house, saying, oh, all you have to do is self-report. Well, of course, no company's going to go, yeah, we're poisoning you folks. Here's our report. Oh, fuck no. They're definitely going to craft it like Ansel Keys did with his 7-country study that included like 22 or 23 countries. Yeah, they're going to craft it to make it look like, yeah, this is perfectly fine. Don't look over here. Nothing to see as we're taking an industrial lubricant and formulating it to human consumption. Looking at you, canola oil.
Yes. So she does have a few tips for finding unrefined cold-pressed sunflower oil. If it's virgin, unless they're lying, of course you don't really know that, it's sold in...
Extra virgin, kind of a virgin, maybe a virgin.
Exactly. It's sold in small, dark bottles. It's expensive. By the way, $45 a gallon, which is about what you'd pay for a real virgin olive oil.
I need to point out the fact that if your olive oil is not coming in a dark or opaque bottle, that's a problem because the degradation of your oil is rapid with any kind of light.
Yeah, and if it doesn't degrade because it's not real olive oil, well, anyway, you have your answer.
I was going to say, unless it says kosher, because we've been asked this, in the grocery store, how can I tell if it says kosher? It probably isn't cut. If it doesn't, probably is.
Yeah. And if it's cheap, sold in a large, light, or clear container, has a pale color or no color, and has a mild odor and flavor, then it's probably refined. Now, while sunflower oil is produced...
Yeah, I want to point that out. If any of you have gotten the Villa Capelli oil that we get, if you've taken our recommendation and ordered any, and then you put it up against any olive oil that you're going to buy in the grocery store, and even I would argue to say possibly because I have not actually bought a kosher olive oil, but I'm pretty sure when you compare the olive oil that you're buying that claims it's 100% pure from California... And then you compare the olive oil from Villa Capelli coming straight from Puglia, Italy. Oh, yeah, baby. Yeah. That olive oil is not clear. Oh, no. It's full of all that wonderful, milky, just... Phone boy, help me out here. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Now, when sunflower oil is produced by any method other than cold pressing, the oil will not be suitable for eating, and that's why it's refined. There's literally nothing else in our food supply that is improved by refining, which usually makes foods worse for us. Refining flour turns nutritious wheat grains into less nutritious white flour. Refining beets turns these healthy vegetables into empty calorie beet sugar. Beets, that sounds good. And I know we still have a few jars of that in our pantry.
Yeah, but that has sweet in it.
Yeah, it does. Now, cooking with sunflower oil, whether it's refined or not, is just as bad as using seed oil. And if you can't cook with it, what are you going to put it in? Salad dressing? I mean, come on.
Well, that's why I was saying there's really not a lot of applications if you cannot heat this oil other than salad dressing. We were talking about this behind the mic.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you are making a salad dressing, yeah, I'm kind of a bigger fan of the avocado oil. I'm not going to say the olive oil because, oh, that
it can be a little
Villa Capelli will punch you in the mouth. It is aggressive. But a nice light avocado oil is much better for you and better tasting than the sunflower.
Yeah. So, okay, the punchline of this story, which I want to get to, says sunflower oil may look sunny and natural, but in most cases, it's just another seed oil dressed up with better marketing. Leave it to Kate Shanahan to say what needs to be said.
I mean,
there.
You know, saying the quiet parts out loud, and she when they do.
Yeah, she ain't wrong on that one. So
no, she isn't. That's why you constantly hear us talking about the Hateful Eight and the fact that we don't use sunflower oil because, cold or otherwise, it just doesn't have enough bang for the buck, so to speak. At $45 a, how much was it? 45
a gallon?
Yeah, and we get, how much oil, olive oil do we?
We get?
It's a 3-liter tin.
Yeah, they've gone up above $100 now. I think it used to be a 3-liter tin is not quite a gallon, but yeah, but it's
okay,
also, but it's
so,
also being shipped from freaking, you know.
Right, but follow my logic on this, okay? We're paying arguably $100 for just under a gallon worth of oil.
No.
How many applications does that oil have?
Honey,
numerous.
Yeah, and the two tins we buy will last us a year or two. You know?
Right, and that's not what I mean. Believe me, you've seen me cook. Yeah. I am not stingy when I use my oil. I get up in that.
We don't use it every day, but when we use it, right? And it's good stuff.
Right.
And it's like I said,
But that's my point, is if you're going to be spending that exorbitant amount of money for an oil, you want that thing to be everything from your sex lube to the shit you make a stir fry with. You do not want to have to worry about, I grabbed the wrong bottle and now I have to dump out the entire skillet of heated oil. Yeah. And good luck. That's not easy to do.
Of course, if you're like Vinnie Tortorich, you got your scalp massaged with olive oil. You know,
dude, there may be something to that. Like I love you, but I'm not rubbing olive oil in your hair.
No.
That shit's too expensive.
No, bro.
If you want a beer hair shampoo, I'll hook you up. I'll grab a Pabst Blue Ribbon and crack that fucker, and we'll get down to business. By God, but no, I'm not putting a very expensive olive oil in your hair.
All right. Well, anyway. I think it's time to go on to the next story because... Yes.
Oh, you mean we actually have to adult? Well, shit. I guess I can do that. I guess I can tell you about this low-calorie ingredient that could be contributing to your cognitive decline, according to a study.
Here are the ingredients in Splenda. It contains dextrose. Dextrose is sugar. Maltodextrin, 2 sugars. And sucralose, 3 sugars. Sucralose is a zero-calorie, high-intensity sweetener that's 600 times sweeter than sugar. Your brain was never meant to use Splenda at all. It's made by replacing hydrogen and oxygen groups on sucrose table sugar molecules with chlorine atoms. Okay. Does that sound like anything you should be putting in your body anytime soon? Anything.
I'd rather just have a little bit of sugar, honestly.
Yeah, and arguably it's probably safer to just have a little bit of sugar instead of any of these artificial sweeteners. But some sugar substitutes, like those in diet soda and ultra-processed snacks, could have consequences for long-term brain health, according to a study published Wednesday in Neurology. Scientists have found that the consumption of low and no-calorie sweeteners was associated with faster cognitive decline. And the new results are at least a suggestion that this consumption is not as harmless as we think. It's not a safer option to sugar, like we thought before. It's actually much worse, and you've heard us talking about it for a good long time now. Now, this study followed more than 12,700 adults from Brazil for a median of 8 years. So basically, it was 16 years and the median being 8. That's how I read that. So the participants were between 35 and 74 years of age when the study began, with an average age of 52. And it included more participants, and it has a longer follow-up time than earlier studies that probed the associations between artificial sweeteners and cognitive decline. At the start of the study, participants completed questionnaires about their diets over the past 12 months. They were asked about eating or drinking products with 7 sugar substitutes, which provide sweetness with no or few calories. Aspartame, saccharin, acesulfame, K, which I've never heard of, erythritol, sorbitol, xylitol, and tagatose. Like, people can remember what they had for breakfast yesterday, less how much they, you know, how many drinks that they had with this shit in it. I mean, are you kidding me? So researchers divided the participants based on the total number of sugar substitutes they consumed. The lowest group averaged 20 milligrams a day. Let that sink in for a second. A day! The highest averaged 191 milligrams. Now, for aspartame, this is roughly the amount of a can of diet soda. Ew! I'm sorry. Ew!
Yeah,
first of all, it tastes terrible. Have you all ever had diabetes? Jesus Christ on his cross, that's some gross nasty.
Yes, and I can tell you that, yes, not only does it taste nasty, it feels nasty coming out the other side, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, much like the, you know, clip we have of Vinny talking about the what do you call it,
the Ozempic shits or whatever, you know.
Yeah, something like that. But the thing is this, okay? Just what makes my brain melt is when I encounter these people who have type 2 diabetes and they're sitting there with a diabetes in their fucking hand, like, oh, it's got no sugar in it. I'm like, you do realize you're killing yourself twice as fast with the fake sugar, and people are just really addicted. I'm not going to go off on that rant, but
no. But I can, oh, okay. I can tell you in my own self. You know the gum that comes in the little.
Yeah, you've talked about ice
cube. Yeah, the ice cube. Like I used to say, an open container of those is an empty container because I could not stop eating them. Right,
but why?
Yeah, because of the addictive nature of the aspartame in them. It's just not good. So we don't eat those anymore and it's terrible that this stuff is incredibly addictive. I mean, I cannot believe, like, you know, that in my own, and it does all this stuff to me, and it's legal, right? But why is it legal? Why do we fucking put up with this shit? I mean, seriously, you think it's like, you know, okay, I'd we can either be dead from high fructose corn syrup or we can be dead from the artificial sweeteners.
Well, at the end of the day, the end game is that they want us dead, period, dot. Now, the study participants completed cognitive tests every 4 years. After adjusting for other factors, the researchers found middle-aged people under 60 who consumed the highest amount of sweeteners showed the fastest decline in overall thinking and memory skills. Of course, they throw the food frequency questionnaire under the bus because people may not remember what they ate. Meanwhile, I'm sure they'll continue to use food frequency questionnaires to prove that the standard American diet, or SAD as we call it, is just fine. Again, don't look over here. Nothing to see.
Yes, exactly. So, yes, and as Bully Steed points out in the chat, even flies don't consume
That is not food.
Yeah, if the insects won't eat it, it's probably not food. Yeah. But anyway, I think, you know, what maybe you should eat. Oh boy, this might do some triggering here. The 10 healthiest fruits and vegetables you can eat.
Pumba, you eat like a pig.
I am a pig.
You gotta eat the right stuff. Start with a little meat, a little dairy. You gotta add a bunch of fruit. And lots of veggies.
Yes.
Yes, tons of fruits and veggies. Carbs, carbs, carbs. 75% of your plate, according to myplate.org. They want you to eat 75% carbs. And we wonder why we have an obesity epidemic in this country. Take it away, phone boy.
That's right. Yeah. Because the article itself puts quotes around the word healthiest, meaning it's almost as if the truth wants to come out that not all of these things are healthy. And we'll give you. And the author, of course, is an expert. And in this case, they're employed by Food Network. So, you know, their insight will be awesome. So here we go. Here are the 10 fruits and vegetables they say you think you should eat. Mangoes. Are you kidding me? Now, unless you live somewhere that mangoes are natively grown, you shouldn't eat these things at all. Now, they're tasty, don't get me wrong, and they probably have a lot of great things in them, but they're full of sugar, and you can feel real good about all the greenhouse gases that were spent to ship those mangoes to you, which somehow is less than a cow fart. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Kale smells about as bad as a cow fart. Yeah.
Especially coming out.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Yeah, I don't know anybody who fucking eats that stuff willingly. Bananas, yet another fruit that probably doesn't grow where you live and is shipped from a place that does. It also contains way too much sugar like the mangoes, so yeah, I don't know about that. So yeah, these environmentalists, you know, they say, "Oh, eat fruits and vegetables," but they don't say where they come from, you know. Okay, spinach. Now I can get behind spinach, right? Popeye might have been onto something, opting for iron-rich spinach to help keep him flexing. Now, the versatile green can be enjoyed cooked or raw in soup, on sandwiches, or on pizza and salad. And one cup of raw spinach, which isn't even very much, boasts 181% of your daily needs for vitamin K, as well as ample doses of vitamin A, folate, and magnesium.
Now, I will tell you, I actually do use spinach in my vegetable broth that I make. That is why there is a bit of green sentiment at the bottom. It is from the spinach leaves. And I love the fact that all that wonderful nutrient goes into the water that makes up the broth. And the soup we had last week was actually made with some of that spinach-rich vegetable broth.
Yeah, that's good. It's good stuff. I'm curious why they say wild blueberries and not just, like, blueberries. Are the wild ones better? I mean, if you can find them, yeah. Actually, we tried to... somebody had planted a blueberry bush when we lived on Wisteria Lane. Never really grew any blueberries. But.
Oh, I would love to grow blueberry bushes when we get our property. I frigging love blueberries. They are very antioxidant rich.
Yes, they are, and it's if you can find them. So yeah, that may be something we grow. You know, it's also an issue with like sunlight and that kind of thing, and
it's also a matter of you need to net those things because the birds will pick your bushes dry.
Oh yeah, no kidding, right? So anyway. So one cup of offers up to 6 grams of tummy-pleasing fiber, as well as 170% of the daily recommended amount of manganese, a mineral that supports bone health and metabolism.
See, so you don't actually need to eat all that grain. Just eat some blueberries and you'll be good.
That's right. Now, carrots. Now, another no-fuss vegetable worth devouring, from vision and skin protecting beta-carotene to fiber and potassium. Carrots are one of the most affordable veggies around. They were good. We had that in the soup that you made last week, too. So
we don't eat a lot of tubers, but carrots are one that we allow.
Okay,
ourselves.
So you're gonna pronounce this. Please pronounce this as mirepoix, right? The
mirepoix, yeah, a staple in mirepoix, yeah, which is carrots, onions, and celery, respectively.
Yeah, they're also wonderful in cold pressed juices, salads, and piled high on a sandwich.
No. You're not putting any carrots on my sandwich. We'll fight.
And we're not doing.
Don't put it in my salads either.
Yeah, they're also a little carby, so don't have too many of them. But
yeah, that's why moderation is definitely the word of the day in that.
Now they say tomatoes are great, and the problem is that commercial tomatoes taste like shit.
They have no flavor. No, they don't taste like shit, mon ami. They just have zero flavor.
Yeah, well,
it's like eating cardboard.
Well, no, it's like eating
without the horrible texture.
It's like eating mush, honestly, to me. But which is one of the reasons
pun intended.
Yeah, that's why when I had a Granger County tomato, that was a life changing experience because that thing has flavor.
There's also a reason, by the way, you know, all the tomatoes that we have in storage and on our shelf, those are Granger County. That was still of the 250 pounds I purchased and put in jars that year.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, they're one of the few foods that have more antioxidants when cooked. The antioxidant lycopene found in tomatoes may help reduce your chances of heart disease and certain types of cancer. Sadly, most store-bought tomatoes have zero flavor, which
as
is,
you
I said.
Spoke of.
Yes.
Well, but you know why? They're all hothouse. They're all rush grown. Yeah. This is fucking with nature. I'm going to say it out loud, you know, and that's why. If you notice, all of your stuff that you buy in the grocery store, unless it's coming literally locally, and I can tell you, those Granger counties, we drive about an hour, hour and a half. I'm getting them basically off the vine, folks, where they're grown in that wonderful soil. Okay. That's why a lot of what you're finding in your grocery stores, if it is not a local produce, if it is like an avocado from Mexico, that's why it doesn't taste like anything, because it's fucking rush grown and shipped. You don't know how long ago that thing was picked. Believe me, Phone Boy can attest to how long apples in the great state of Fuck Jay Inslee can sit in warehouses. And that's where they're grown. They should be immediately going to your store shelf. You should not have to wait more than 3 to 4 days, not a joke, for a Washington apple on the East Coast. And it should still taste really fresh. The problem of which is those apples may have been sitting in a warehouse for months before they ever reach your store shelves. Or worse, they've crossed multiple borders. But I'll let you continue, Phoneboy.
Yeah, well, there's one thing I want to say just as I think related to that rant.
It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
Now, the other three things, which we're not going to have too much more rant about it, but garlic, which is actually linked to cancer prevention, and I think that we like garlic in Casa Loza.
We love garlic.
We love avocados from Mexico or Hawaii or wherever they come from. oh my goodness. I know what happened. All right. Anyway, so we have our avocados and then apples, right? And those are, you know, avocados have antioxidants and apples have quercetin. And actually, it's funny. There's actually like an apple tree in the other at the end of our block of
At the end of the building, there's actually an apple tree, but I don't know what kind they are. And unless I knew what kind they were, I wouldn't go out and forage for them.
Yeah, I think I've actually had one time. I don't remember what kind they are, but yeah. It's just one of those things you got to catch it at the right time. They're not that, yeah. I don't think they were a kind I would want necessarily. But yeah, and that's also one of those things I like to, you know. It's I'll have one every once in a while.
Here's the thing: I want so bad to go to the orchard and get some apples and make homemade applesauce and put it in jars. But where am I going to find the time? Because the amount of sugar, first of all, I don't use sugar. I use honey, and I can assure you, when paired with cinnamon, it makes an applesauce that will make your tongue beat your brains out without spiking your blood sugar off the charts.
Yeah, I would like to try some of that, but
I need to find time to... Well, yeah. First of all, I have to make sure that the orchard is picking the particular type of apple I want. Then I have to find or allocate the time. So we might be sans a show if that applesauce means that much to you.
Yeah.
it's a day process to get them, peel them, process them, jar it. Yeah, it's a weekend.
Yeah, like I said, it's one of those things that will, yeah, it's probably, it may be like a future year, maybe not this year kind of thing. Right?
Yeah,
like,
I get what you're saying. Yeah, and it's not like as if I'm going to stop knowing
how to do it. So, yeah, it's a lot of what we're, we're thinking about
sustainability.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out, you know, can we do it right now? Yeah, not right now. You know what? We got to get to the bottom of this next story, though. I think that's because we're at the last health story here.
Yeah, and I think people are going to be so glad that I left this one for last and probably wish I had left it on the cutting room floor, because we are going to get to the bottom of the Ozempic vulva fear.
Oh.
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 Ozempic.
Yes. Yes. Oh. Yes. 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 Yes.
Now, although Ozempic vulva isn't a medical term, it's a phrase that women are now using to describe changes in their intimate health, like irritation, dryness, and discomfort after starting Ozempic. There are several indirect ways it can cause vulva and vaginal health effects, even though there's no clinical evidence. They're linked from reduced appetite, rapid weight loss, and digestive side effects. Ozempic works by reducing appetite and slowing digestion. This does help with weight loss, but it can also mean lower nutrient intake. Now, this can lead to you losing out on vital minerals, vitamins, and healthy fats. Over time, this can take a toll on your hormone production, the integrity of mucous membranes, and tissue repair, including those located in your private Laguna Mystery, folks. Your VJ and your vulvy. Yeah, that can be affected, ladies. Dehydration? Ozempic can cause vomiting, diarrhea, and nausea, which all make dehydration more likely to happen. And your girl tissues are extremely sensitive to the hydration status. So, of course, if you're dehydrated, so is your little lady, folks. Hormonal changes from weight loss. Fat cells are known for storing and releasing estrogen. As weight is rapidly dropping, so are the estrogen levels, causing mood swings, irregular cycles, and mainly VJ dryness. Now, low estrogen levels also reduce the natural lubrication and elasticity of your vulval tissues. So, yeah, like that intimate time, dryness plus the lack of elasticity, you know, in your cave of pleasure, That's going to be a problem, ladies.
Yeah, trust me, guys. Yeah, it's a problem. That's all
and,
I can
and
say.
I'm going to be real. Let's talk real, guys and gals, okay? Lubrication only goes so far, and quite honestly, you're putting something not natural inside of your very intimate parts, which then opens you up to bacteria, infections, irritation. If you're already irritated because you're taking this Ozempic, that's a problem. Now, gut and vaginal biome shifts, yeah, the stuff they suggest for nutrients to fix this, of course, healthy fats, omega-3s, olive oil, nuts, seeds. All right, whoever put nuts in there is a fucking comedian.
Yeah, but this is...
I'm just saying.
I understand this is a
but
mainstream
I know nuts,
murder.
Nuts have healthy fats, but I'm just saying, you know, good one. Seeds, oily fish, avocado, of course, vitamin E, which can be found in almonds, spinach, avocado, sunflower seeds. Now, it's interesting that it's okay to eat the seeds and not the oil. Just want to point that out. Now, of course, B vitamins, the 6, the 12, the folate. You can get that in eggs and whole grains. Let the whole grains alone, folks. The leafy greens and fish, the eggs, yeah, go after those. Get your B6 and 12 and stuff in that. Zinc. Find it in chickpeas, meat, seafood, and pumpkin seeds. I don't have a problem with any of that. The chickpeas, as long as you turn them into hummus,
Yeah, although they're a little carby.
Yeah,
but
they are carby. But I want to go to Israel and I want to eat the hummus. I needed the chickpeas. But anyway, iron. Of course, you get that from good old red meat.
Yeah, I'm surprised that was even allowed to be in the article, personally.
I know, with how much they bastardize red meat, right? But fortified cereals, you can throw that the fuck out. Spinach, we're back to your yummy greens. I got plenty of good recipes for that. Probiotics and fiber from kefir, kimchi, yogurt. Skip the multigrains, whole grains again. And of course, veggies. We love our veggies.
Yeah, the kefir.
That's I thought it was called kefir.
Yeah,
anyway.
Kefir. That's how I remembered as a kid. I don't know.
I know what kefir is and I'm trying to remember. Can you help me remember?
It's something that I know that people that have lactose issues might use instead. I think it's
okay.
Yeah, I think it's something. It's some kind of like yogurt or something. I actually can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I think that vaguely seems familiar.
Yeah.
Kind of like oh my God, what is that Indian drink? A lassi.
Yes.
That they make.
Yeah,
I think that's made with kefir.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's fermented lactose. There we
Thank
go.
You, Bully Steed. Fermented lactose.
So there you go. See, if we knew Bully, having Bully Steed in the chat is great because
she's a wealth of knowledge. Yeah, we adore her. She's fantastic.
Yes, she's well traveled and knows.
She
knows,
is
knows
and very well spoken.
Yes.
But ladies, the kicker and the cap off of this entire article, one way to help with this, other than do not allow the Gila Monster Venom in your body, drink more water, hydrate, and not running it through coffee grounds, ladies.
Although we love doing that, but drink more water.
If you want to hydrate, coffee is not the way to do it, okay? Water, 100%. H2, oh my God, you don't need to be dehydrated, especially if you enjoy the after party. We want to make sure that everything is working properly, ladies. We want to keep the factory functioning so that we can keep the men happy. Yeah, I said it. Because I'll tell you what, doing a little sum of the what? Yeah, it makes me happy.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you! All right, so now we do have a pizzeria owner who sees people eating from a dumpster and offers them free pies and a slice of dignity. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think Pizza Hut would do something like this, but a Minnesota pizzeria owner is making headlines for the kindness he's shown to a dumpster divers behind his restaurant. "I can't sit in a building full of food and watch somebody starve in my parking lot," he told National News, determined to take action. Pretty much as soon as Chris Kolstad took ownership of Pizza Man in Columbia Heights 6 years ago, he discovered that people were eating out of his dumpsters, and it could have been animals, but then again, animals don't enjoy their food with napkins and a bottle of water. He had put out signs at first asking them to stop. Not only didn't they, but a short time it became far more frequent. So on July 29th, he took to Facebook for a public plea. He said, "Please do not eat out of our dumpster," wrote Kolstad. "If you're that desperate for food, please come ask." Interesting that he did posted that on social media and didn't just put a sign outside, but okay. If you're too embarrassed to ask, find a way to call us and ask if there's a way to leave us a small cheese pizza outside the back door or something. You don't even have to see us, he continued. If you're the ones doing so, leave me a note and we'll find a way to leave any extras or mistakes out back so you have something to eat without going through the trash. USA Today reports that after his post went viral, Kolstad shared a donation link, which has raised over $4,000 to help cover the cost of the pies he'd leave out back. Speaking with the outlet, Kolstad estimates he's helped over 100 people with food who have asked for it rather than dug for it. Recently, one of the recipients left a touching note behind for Kolstad and his staff to read. And this is why we do what we do, he captioned the photo with. And actually, if you click on the link in the, for those of you who are in the chat, I'll dump it in the show. And for those who are listening, I'll put a link to this in the show notes, and you can see that
that note will bring a tear.
Yeah, I'm not.
I read it.
Yeah,
because I almost pulled this story, funny enough, and because I knew I wouldn't be able to get through it.
Yeah, well, thankfully I'm here to get through it. But yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Because this is yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff we want to let people know about, that there's still good people out there trying to do good things.
And it's interesting because in my philosophy class, one of the recent assignments, there was a TED Talk that talked about dignity. And when I read that story initially, I thought that is a way to help people and still let them keep their dignity. Because I've been homeless. I know what that is. Okay. To go without or, try to find something that's edible that someone else threw away. That will strip you of every degree of dignity you've ever had, to be the person who needs help. And I want to side digress a little bit, because there are so many people who I see who are unhomed, as they call it. I fucking hate that term. God damn it, they're homeless. They are without abode. They are the downtrodden. Okay? They are the ones who society forgot and who people don't see. But they're still people. And not all of them are bad nutcase people. Some of them are just down on their luck. Something happened, a succession of something that happened. And it's led to where they have a family that they're just trying to put food in their stomachs. They're not trying to scam you. They're not trying to fuck you over. They're just trying to get through another day on terra firma. Those are the people who really need people like this man, who have the compassion, who want to allow them to keep the dignity that they have left, as little as it is, to try to rebuild where they're at. Because anyone out there who's ever been knocked down to that level where you don't know how you're going to stand up and put one foot in front of another the next day, I know what that feels like. And I know a lot of you out there know what it feels like. And it's not a good feeling. And kudos to this guy for just honestly fulfilling one of the basic human needs in life, which is food. And it's funny because I also pulled a happiness story that involves food, because these Indian cafes let you pay with garbage. 1 kilo of plastic gets you rice, 2 curries, and dal.
You American bastards are only paying me $20 a week.
In the Indian city of Ambikapur?
Yeah, Ambikapur, I think, is probably how you say that.
Thank you. Several garbage cafes will give a person an entire 4-course meal if they bring 1 kilo of plastic waste with them. Feeding on average 20 people a day, it's a clever and distinctly Indian way of clearing 2 hurdles in one jump, that of hunger among the lower classes, the Dalid of the caste system, and that of plastic litter in its cities. Not that Ambikapur in central India's...
Yeah, let's just not even say
that. Yeah, we're not going to try that one. In a particular state, is particularly unkempt. It's earned a reputation as the city of no landfills. But part of earning that reputation was coming up with great ideas like the garbage cafe. Generating 226 metric tons of plastic waste per year, Ambikapur citizens and businesses recycle almost all of it already. But for the bits and pieces that slip through the cracks, locals like Ramshi Mandal can hunt them down, gather them up, and feed her whole family. 2.2 pounds of plastic trash, like snack wrappers and water bottles, will get you rice, two curries, dal, roti bread, and salad. While Indian urban planners may not have the money to pay for sophisticated trash collection regimes and recycling machines, they can leverage a never-endless supply of cheap labor. Small-time recyclers dot the city, and they used to pay the poor or homeless for plastic they collected. But at 10 rupees per kilo, it might require a whole day's work to earn enough for the meal they can get at the garbage cafe. I can get food for my family in exchange for the plastic I collect. It makes all the difference in our lives, Mandal told a BBC reporter visiting a garbage cafe. The cafe is run by Amikapur Municipal Corporation, AMC, which is Indian parlance for what we Americans would call a government-sponsored enterprise. Basically, a corporate structure put together to carry out functions in place of a government bureau. Vinod Patel, the AMC employee who manages the garbage cafes, said that on average they feed 20 people a day, translating to 60 kilograms or 44 pounds of plastic waste. That's pretty fucking significant, y'all. Wow. Now, if food is available in place of plastic, we're not only helping to fill empty stomachs, but we're also contributing to cleaning up the environment. Now, the BBC story also reported in detail the extent of recycling operations in Amikapur, which combine door-to-door waste collection with neighborhood recyclers employing 50,000 women, all of which have allowed the city to eliminate the need for landfill or dumping ground in city limits. Now, the author of the report, Hansa Khatun, also listed a number of other cities where garbage cafes can be found. And they're not all in India. Cambodia has also replicated the idea. So, I mean, this is great.
Yeah, I
agree with Bully Steed. Garbage Cafe needs a rebranding. Yeah, I think it would be really good if they could.
We should call it the Lotus Cafe.
Man, get the fuck out of here. That's actually not a bad idea, though. Like, seriously, as part of the thing, once we can get that off the ground.
Yeah.
Actually helping our community where we are
to
feed people.
Oh,
and
hell yes.
Such. Oh, fuck yeah. We're not that pretentious, folks. Just because we have doesn't mean we won't help.
No, and that is, yeah, because honestly, like, that's what we should be doing, right? If we've got something that we can't use or whatever, yeah, we should give it to somebody that can use it. I mean, there's nothing there because it's already there, right? And you want to talk about being good for the environment. I remember as a kid, right? And Bully Steed, you know, can probably also remembers this too. But the ads, you know, they had the ads in the 80s for reduce, reuse, recycle. What the fuck happened to that shit, right?
Are you talking about the triangle? I remember those.
Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, honestly, like, reduce means don't, you know, the part of reduce means stop fucking buying shit you don't need, right?
Phone boy?
Yeah.
Do I need to remind you of the because I can mentality in this country? If I can afford it and it's available, I want it, I'm gonna have it, it's mine, give it to me now.
Yeah,
that is what it is. People, okay, so show of hands in the chat and feel free to weigh in on any of our platforms to let us know the answer to this question. But how many of you actually go to Salvation Army, Goodwill, or a secondhand store to purchase something instead of going online to Amazon or to a big box store? Because I really would know, I would really love to know how many of y'all are like us. Here at the Lotus, we proudly shop at Goodwill. We love going in there and finding these fantastic little, you know, gently loved, still plenty of life left in these items that we are not letting go into a landfill and contribute to the mountains of trash that already exist.
Yeah, it depends on what it is, but yeah.
See, Bully Steed says Goodwill is the first stop.
And when I'm done with my clothes, because I've been through a whole lot of clothes with the up and downs of my weight the last however
I love years. Being able to just throw it all in a fucking bin and bring it to Goodwill and say, here, make money, help people.
Yes.
It gets it out of my fucking hair.
Exactly. So, yeah, but anyway, so yeah, we're big on whatever we're doing. Like, yeah, you know, look, I think it's important to, you know, to give back and to make sure that, you know, because part of the waste of it is, yeah, we, you know, that people have too much, you know, we have more than enough, right? The problem is that the resources aren't really well allocated. And I don't think a central planner is a good way to necessarily allocate those resources. I think the boots on the ground that are closer to the resources are probably better at allocating resources where they need to go and where they're going to actually do something good.
And I mean, I grew up on secondhand thrift store stuff. You know, I admittedly grew up poor as fuck, okay? And I worked for Goodwill for a time, and it was not a horrible job. And I love going into our local store. I'm glad that they put that store in, because some of the amazing things that we have found, like, I'm very partial to the basket we have our Mountain Madness soap in. It is perfect just the way it is, that, like, one little section for my conditioner bars and my shampoo bars, and one little section for my shampoo or bath soap.
And last night I was trying to figure out which section had the soap that I used.
Because you and I share a basket.
Yes, exactly. But
you know what? Your soap is easy to distinguish because of the fact that you have soaps that are simple, like Minimalist and, you know,
I have a Mocha
Orange
Madness
Tobacco or Mocha Madness. Yeah, I'm the one with the You Do Yuzo and, like, the dual fruit. Like, I'm about to order some Applejack, and fight me. This is some great smelling soap. I'm glad the fall collection is back.
Yeah, MountainMadnessSoap.com, by the way, in case you
love them. They're not paying us to, to boost their item or promote.
Yeah, the posh English
we just
call
fucking
it,
love it.
Yeah, and the posh English call it upcycling. Yeah, so
I love that term.
Yeah, that's where the reuse comes in, right? So So for example, you talk about the number. If you look around the studio, you can see the number of electronics that are currently in use, and a bunch of others that are not in use
and have been procured from said Goodwill.
Yeah, and some of them have been. Yeah, some of the monitors I have in here have been procured from Goodwill. There's also.
So it looks like the consensus in the chat is that most everyone is on the Goodwill train. They love shopping there. They donate to them, their clothes, their toys, whatever. And I love the fact Billy Steed says she's looking for a pizza stone. I love our pizza stone. That is, and granted, I didn't get it at Goodwill, but it's one of the best products that I've ever gotten, especially with the pork rind pizza crust that I make that comes out so excellent since we don't eat grains and stuff.
Yes.
But another opportunity for you all. Tell us about your favorite end of summer activity, 253-237-3321, because we are about to hopefully hear from the Rev Cybertrucker himself with some stupidity.
Hi-dee-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. And since I'm MIA, here's Phone Boy to take over.
Yeah, Rev is, we don't know exactly what Rev is doing, but that's
probably
okay.
Probably working hard, because that's what he does.
Yes, exactly. But there's a reason I always have something in reserves, and so we're gonna go with the following here. Rigdon Osmond Dees III, born March 14th, 1950, best known as Rick Dees, is an American radio personality.
Weekly Top 40.
Yes, the Weekly. Yes.
Sorry, couldn't help it.
Yes, he's best known for the internationally syndicated show, The Rick Dees Weekly Top 40 Countdown. And for his 1976 satirical novelty song, Disco Duck. While the title of this song happens to be a catchphrase of a popular particular character in The Simpsons, I can assure you that the Rick Dees song came well before it on an album called Put It Where the Moon Don't Shine in 1984. The Simpsons didn't become a thing until they showed up on Tracy Ullman in like 87 or 88. So there you go. So Rick Dees got it first. Now, also included on Dees' Put It album was a track called When Sonny Sniffs Glue. A portion of the track contains a parody of the Johnny Mathis version of the standard When Sonny Gets Blue. Now, Dees sought permission from the song's copyright owner to use it in the parody, but the use was denied. Now, Dees still went ahead and used it and was then sued. The court ended with Dees winning. Now, the judge determined that since the track was making fun of Mathis's style of singing, it didn't violate any copyright laws. And an appeal resulted in the same decision. So now, we're going to hear this song by Rick Dees that I first heard on the Dr. Demento show. Actually, I heard of it on the Dr. Demento show, but I never actually played it, because he played it during a funny 25, and he played a snippet of it because he said, we just don't have time for 25 whole songs anymore. Well, guess what? It's my fucking show. You'll have to hear the whole version of it in Studio 33.
It's worth it.
But it's Rick Dees. Eat my shorts.
Thank you. turns. I hate your guts. You turn to me and whisper, you're a stupid klutz. And baby, when your memory starts to linger, I reach out and give you.
Okay, we're gonna have to play the whole thing in Studio 33 because we don't.
Oh, it's so damn worth it. I'm over here singing along. When Phone Boy brought this to my attention, first of all, that's the whole reason I did, you know, the weekly top 40 thing, because that's where I remember Rick Dees from. But the fact that he has this song and smooth vocals, can you ladies admit you have a little wet spot here in that nice 80s vibe going, and then his smooth vocals come in about how bad he hates his fucking ex? That is just a really great song.
It is, exactly. So we'll play it in Studio 33. But anyway, that is the full one because, yeah, you know, things. All right, so... Honey, it's time for the Tales from Rideshare segment. Are you ready to take that ride?
That's right. We are going to take that ride. And surprise, motherfuckers, people did take that ride this week. If you can remember that there's been many weeks when they haven't. Well, this week they have. And I assure you, it has been an absolutely wild week. Because... everything I have for you in this segment literally happened within about a 48-hour period, because I only worked 2 days this week. But boy, were they some action-packed days. The first thing that really got me was pulling off the interstate onto a familiar area near downtown Knoxville, the old city to be precise, and seeing a homeless man, bless his heart, putting a road cone on his head, and not just a small road cone. No. The about 5 pound heavy ass, thick, orange, tall road cone. And then just being there, just kind of walking around with it on his head. And I'm just like, light turned green. I looked at my passenger and I'm just like, nope. People wouldn't believe me with the things that I see driving around this city. I present to you Cone Man. But that actually was not as great as the fact that I had to cancel a ride this week. Oh, yes. Now, I realize I fucked myself because I should have ended the ride instead of canceling it, because this woman, now y'all have heard Phoenix rage just a lot before over the fact that if you have a child who requires a car seat, you really should have that car seat with you when transporting said child in my rideshare. If you do not, you will. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200 immediately. Be told, we are not going any further until that child is in a car seat or I end the ride. I ended up having to end this ride. And instead of ending it, I canceled it and ended up in a fight with customer service over the fact that even though I drove half of the ride, which was worth better than $10, they were going to compensate me. Now, wait for it, y'all. A whopping $1.76. I said, no. You're not just compensating me a canceled fucking ride fee. I drove half this ride. I deserve half the fare. Oh, well, that's the best we can do. I said, good, then you just lost yourself a driver. That's all right. Now, I'm not sure if I'm going to stick to that, but I assure you, I will make them hurt for all the money that they steal from me every time. And the final thing I have, which was in the category of no way that just happened, I am having a great night last night. I've got more co-eds than I can keep track of in and out of my car. They smell great. They look great. And everybody's energy is just amazing because the Vols are playing Georgia and we're going to dog whoop the shit out of them. But irrelevant to that, everybody's energy's up. We're having a great time. We're driving on the interstate. And this white SUV, y'all, I do not know why. I didn't see anything cause this to happen all I saw was this white SUV with great fervor swipe to the left and smack into the trailer of a hotshot. Now, if you don't know what a hotshot is, it's like a dually pickup truck that's got like a car carrying trailer. Can carry like two or three cars on it, depending on the size. I cannot lie to y'all when I tell you this SUV sideswiped the hell out of this car carrier. Now, I hit the brakes immediately. I had plenty of room in front of me because my only thought was, oh, here we go. This shit about to tangle up. Amazingly, neither one of the vehicles lost control. And they were going at a good 60 plus, you know, clip when it happened. The SUV pulled over. The truck took a little longer to pull over. But the girls never even saw it. They were wondering why we hit our brakes. I'm like, did y'all just see that SUV sideswipe that truck? They're like, is that what happened? I said, uh-huh. I'm like, that's why I hit my brakes. Because immediately mom mode kicked in. And as soon as I hit my brakes, my arm went over and slammed into my passenger seat. Because even though they're in the back seat, they're seat belted, my brain is still, I gotta hold people back. It's just a mom thing. But this is why, y'all, I should get combat fucking pay doing rideshare in Knoxville. Because the people who drive do not know what they're doing. They're out of their tree. And this is just another example. And the girls were, oh, should we call 911? Should we? No. I said, ladies, I'm going to introduce y'all to a new term. It's called a SEP field. Someone else's problem. Learn it. Love it. That is not something you want to get involved in. You don't need to be a part of that. I'm sure they're going to work it out just fine on their own. So that's all I've got from rideshare this week, y'all. It was crazy. It was wild. And I can tell you last night was unreal. The surge in the city because of this game was so huge. I made so much money. And when Phoneboy finally finished rideshare radio last night and he was like, oh, I want you to come home. I'm like, I don't want to come home. The fucking surge in the city is $20 and $30, which means that's how much you're paying just to get in my car before I ever make Tire Revolution. And you want me to come the fuck home? You've got to be kidding me. But I did. I came home and I got some good sleep. Obviously not enough for an on-time start, but there's other things going on behind the mic personally that Phoenix is dealing with, which, as I said, my stomach was not good. Like, for whatever reason, it wasn't agreeing with the lunch that I put in it. So trying to get kickstarted for this show was like having the brakes on and you're trying to push your scooter off. But irrelevant to the fact, I am feeling better and it's time to jam with Mr. Phoneboy.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun. And I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
Yes, and your special plans hopefully will include calling 253-237-3321 and telling us about your favorite end of summer activity, and we'll tell you all about ours. And in the meantime, I am totally sure that you are wondering what I'm cooking tonight.
I'm making, like, actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
Yeah, I wish we were going to Denny's, because then I wouldn't have to cook. I'm not really phoning it in, but I'm not really putting a lot of effort behind it. We're just having a basic taco skillet type dinner. And I might even make Sir Bemrose's skin crawl by making Phoneboy put a 20-minute poop loop on so he can rinse the hearts of palm rice to make this particular dinner so that I don't have to. Because, you know, every once in a while I just have to be a diva because, damn it, I'm worth it. And my food is so good.
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
It is good stuff, yeah. And actually, it's something that, you know, and you and I, as a couple, is one of the things we do, right? Is we actually, and this is, you know, we've talked about this behind the mic, but it is something that you and I, honestly, I think if we think about the number of meals that you and I, quote unquote, have together just because of whatever is going on, we probably, it's, you know, a couple times a week, but it's usually together, right? Or we, you know, in terms of like when we're actually doing the prep work and stuff like that, it's, you know, it's never, and I mean, even when we're talking about the brisket that I had last night as dinner, right? I sat there and I thought about it and I went, yeah, okay, you cooked the brisket, but you know, I helped split the wood. And
I was going to say that was kind of a wee because yes. you were with me.
I thought about it. Right. And that's, and then when I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, okay, I actually participated in this. And when we do things, now during the show, it's, you know, when we're doing Studio 33 and that, you know, so, you know, sometimes I do have to come down and go down and help. That's why there's longer poop loops and that kind of thing. Right.
And honestly, because, you know, we're very fourth wall break transparent with our listeners. My thumb on my right hand is really fucked up. So having to try to squeeze a cheesecloth full of, you know, paradise rice, as my son calls it, which is actually hearts of palm rice. Yeah, it's really painful. So to have Foam Boy's big, strong hands to squish my hearts of palm rice, it makes life a lot easier when cooking.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we...
And
so,
yes, I did that on purpose, and I'm not sorry. Yeah. We're changing shit up. We're not going to hide behind it anymore. You're getting it raw, dog, folks. Yeah. We're going to start misbehaving just a lot more because it makes us laugh, and we think it makes you laugh, too.
Well, exactly. And look, I think the one thing that you and we try to do in this show, right, and we because this I think this is relevant to the behind the mic conversation is, look, you know, the one thing I think you're going to get from us, you know, whatever it is we're talking about is, you know, we want to be we're real people, right? We're a real couple. We have things, you know, sometimes we have disagreements. Sometimes we just have a bad day, whatever, right? We're real people, right? And we have our things that we do that sometimes things we need to talk about behind the mic, as they say, but we're real people. But we make mistakes.
And that's one of the things that we highlight. You hear us on 2.5 Bens and also during our text segment talk about why we dislike AI, you know, to the point we have AIisevil.org. That, you know, we post these stories and we encourage you to send or post stories of your own on about why AI should not be integrated to the degree it is. And that being said, yeah, dislike is an understatement. You're right, Sir Remos. We fucking hate AI. But that being said, one of the things we pride ourselves on with all of the shitty ChatGPT AI in produced content out there, we are assured we are human. We joke about the fact that Foam Boy's a glitch, I'm a bot, etc. But at the end of the day, we have pedal heads who have met us, have shared a meal with us, partied with us, talked with us, etc., etc., etc. We are as real as you are going to get. You're going to get a real opinion if you ask it from us. You're going to get our real opinion when we talk about the stories. And we're not politically correct. Now, granted, we don't drop racial slurs and shit like that. But we will call a spade if we have to. We will call people out for shitty behavior. We'll even call ourselves out for shitty behavior if we have to.
Yeah, and sometimes, yeah, we do.
You're muted.
And sometimes we do actually call ourselves out for shitty behavior, and that's part of one of the things that I think, you know, why we're able to, why we do so well is because, you know, when we talk to each other, we're honest with each other, right? And sometimes the truth is a little gritty and a lot of other things, but we also call ourselves out for mutie behavior. Yes, that too. But the point is that we're real.
No. Wait. I've got to tell the story. I'm on the phone with Foam Boy and Tigger today, and no joke, I asked Foam Boy a question, and I'm hearing silence. Silence, and he goes, "Oh, sorry, mute button." Tigger goes, "What? You a mute button? Surely you're kidding."
Exactly. Surely you can't be serious.
Exactly. Yes.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
So just know, pedalheads, that as special as you are not special when it comes to Foam Boy's mute buttons. He exercises them often, even in behind the mic conversations with myself and others.
Exactly. So. This is, but I mean, yeah, so, you know, and I think, you know, it's funny because I think one of the ideas I had when we're talking about this show is that I think because we talk about the fact that you and I have a rather unique relationship, the most of it that you and I.
We communicate in ways other people, unless you're in the circle who understand, would never understand.
Yeah, exactly. We are, like I said, we are, I'd almost call it radical transparency, right, in a way, with each other, right? So.
Yeah, and it has caused some, personal family issues because we are as basically bluntly honest as we are. We are not sugarcoating. We're not saving feelings. Like no. I said, part of why the before the mics went hot on recording that I said, I don't give a fuck what time we start. From now on, we start when we fucking say we start, not when you say we start. Like, I really had a snap moment.
Yeah.
Don't know why. And it wasn't because I was sober, even though I am. It was just, I had had my enough of the time constraints and the push that I felt like I was getting. You know, there's a reason I did a listener count in the chat. And I kind of went Karen behind the mic for a second, just thinking about, we put so much time and effort in, and this extends to more than just the show. It extends to the outside life. The demands other people put on you, you allow them to do that, or you don't, quite frankly. And it's wholly up to you. Now, I understand there's some caveats to that, like your job, your boss, this and that. But in your personal life, you should be the one who is calling the shots and pulling the reins. And I love doing this show. And I want to continue loving to do this show. And one of the problems that Phoneboy and I have found with doing this show, it stopped being fun. And it started being like a requirement. Like a pressurized thing where, ooh, by this time we have to do this and by this time we have to do that. No, not when only 10 of fucking you are listening. When the numbers go up and you show us that it's worth snapping into line, we might. But until then, we're going to run fast and loose and we're going to have a great goddamn time.
They had a great goddamn time.
You're muted.
And Sir Bemrose actually does agree with this. Yeah, we want to do a good show, right? And that's part of when, you know. Not,
and that's what part of the conversation behind the mic was, is that if the energy isn't right, if we try to kind of force that foot into a shoe, it's going to come out bad. You're going to break toes. If you give it a little extra room, you give it a little time to breathe, you know, okay, it took us an extra, you know, between 10 and 30 minutes, depending on, you know, if you want to make the smart ass start of a 420 start.
Yeah.
But it took us a little extra runway to get the energy right in the studio and amongst ourselves. But we did it. We didn't scrap the show. And because there has been that constraint in the past where we've felt like if we don't go on the mic by this time, we're not going on. Well, you know, I'm just saying, like, I made the smart ass comment. Phoenix will pull the plug on this motherfucker. And I think that's really what people need to understand is, you know, we started this show to podcast like no one was listening. And if no one's listening, then why the fuck are we doing this show? And if only 10 of you are listening, then either one of two things needs to happen. More of you need to start showing up and telling us you're listening, or we need to up our game, or maybe a little of both.
Yeah, and I think that's the case, too. And I think we're, so, you know, as this is, these are...
Thank you, Cotton Gin. I don't know who the extra person that started listening was, because when Bully Steed came in, it was 11. You made 12. I don't know where the 13th came from, but hey, it's lucky number 13.
There you go.
And we like
so,
it.
So anyway, so yeah, we are part of upping our game. So I've actually, I went and bought a bunch of domains recently. And so there's now lotuseffect.live, studio33.live, and rideshareradio.live as just... When I for advertising,
it makes it so much easier for advertising. I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I got to figure out I got to figure out something.
Oh, Sir Bemrose, dude, I don't even want to hear the term scraping right now. It is such a fucking buzz term in my digital forensics class. It's making my brain itch, and it's driving me nuts. I went from yay, I'm doing great on my command line to fuck Windows. I need a fucking beer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, there's been a lot of that stuff going on. But I think, and I think we've also kind of, even with like your school, we've been kind of, that's one of the things we've been kind of struggling with behind is figuring out the timing of doing all of this stuff. But I mean, I have to say, honey, I'm very proud of the progress you've made, even if you're struggling with this shit. I mean, honestly, you're doing stuff that I've never done before, because I've never done anything related to forensics. Now, granted, I know some of the concepts and have been in the industry 30 years and can probably figure things out, but you're literally doing things I've never actually done. So
yeah, and I can assure you that scares me on levels we don't talk about, because I feel like when I come home, yes, I can reach out to my professor. Yes, he could do a Zoom with me if necessary, but I don't want to be that person. I don't feel comfortable having to ask for extra help. It embarrasses me. And even more so because I feel like every day I'm getting further behind without having the guardrails I've had this entire time, where you're like, oh yeah, it's been a hot second. Let me, you know, polish up and dust off the cobwebs, but yeah, I've done this. I know what we're doing. This is completely new territory, uncharted waters for you that we're entering into. And I'm kind of looking at you like, hey, Skipper, are you going to navigate? And he's going, fuck that. I got a bitch in the cabin. Like, I'm screwed.
No, it's not quite like that. But yeah, I mean, the bottom line is it, but there's also some very basic things that probably don't help that we've also worked on thing, you know, that are just kind of, you know, that was a, we had a few things that we need. And I knew there was a few things like translating what the instructor said, kind of things that we were able to figure out, which helps too. Right. So
dude, I adore my professor to ends of the earth. But there's even times when I would like to lasso his ass just to tie him down long enough to go, finish a thought, professor, because he's you, except for plus years. This is who you are going to be in when you get to his age, because you both run on the same fucking programming and you're all over the fucking map. And it's great. Your passion is way up here. Your knowledge is way up here. Trying to fucking wrangle that so we can translate it. Oh my God!
Yeah, there's a reason I him and I talk to each other, because him and I kind of run on the same sort of program.
I have literally almost contemplated having you on a random Friday come with me and have Professor show you what the fuck we're doing, so that I would have that guardrail back at home where you could understand and you could help me. I don't need that much help, but it's like this one little missing block. I feel like, okay, for all of you who have ever seen the movie Hudson Hawk, where he has to put the crystal together, and there's this one little piece that he leaves out, okay? And it's a real vital fucking piece. I feel like that's what I'm going through right now, is I have all the pieces of the crystal, and they're pretty, and they're shiny, and once I can put them all together, they're going to make a great presentation, of which I'll get a great grade on, but there's just this one little piece that keeps getting left out in every one of the assignments that we're being given that is so essential for me that I'm just not grasping it. I mean, I had to literally nuke Autopsy and re-download. And let me fucking tell you, downloading Autopsy off a hotspot connection is like sandpaper fucking with no lube or water.
Yeah.
You're going to catch your dick on fire.
Yeah, it's a big thing. That's probably something you should download.
Oh my God, and I don't want to talk about it. I know I've just spent 5 minutes, but I don't want to talk about it. This is just so difficult. What the fuck else do we have to talk about? We seem to be boring them. Oh, I see you've already handled that.
Yeah,
so
I already did the new stream URLs. I already talked about that. So I think we're just kind of, yeah, we just kind of were vamping for a little bit. But I think we have gotten to the point now.
I love this. Bully Steed is trying to be so sweet in the chat. She said, remember, you're bringing a very rare skill set to your coding life. Mother trucking, EMS, you know, that my professor cannot even imagine. No, you're probably right, Bully Steed. My professor probably couldn't even begin to fathom all of the classrooms and things that I have attended and seen and experienced. He has a particular skill set, and I love that skill set. I wish I could download it onto a USB drive and plug it in to my own brain and upload even a fraction of the files that run through his mind. Or phone boys, for that matter. Two very brilliant men. There's a reason I love phone boy as much as I do. I am hella sapiosexual. I am extremely attracted to how smart this man is. But I also like that I can tap into that, and not through his USB cable, thank you very much. But I get to live with this man. I get to do this show with this man. Especially the 2.5 Bens. Maybe you've heard of it. This other smart prick named Sir Bemrose. Smart guy. Real smart guy. Got kind of an attitude problem. It might be a West Coast thing. But no, seriously, I'm extremely blessed to have you, to have my professor, to have all of the dudes named Ben and the dudettes named Bernadette out there who are cheering for me behind the scenes, trying to help me get to the finish line. I appreciate all of you. I do.
Yeah, well.
Bemrose, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Esoterical asshole. Thinks he knows everything. Yeah. I can't. Worst part is he's right. I was waiting for the kicker.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
You know, I think it's time to give the world a wake-up call.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321. And unfortunately, nobody has actually made the phone
nobody
call.
Nobody gives a shit about us.
Here, so but Mama did text something.
Mama
so.
Said, favorite end of summer activity, watching the grandkids get on the school bus. Adios, you little motherfuckers. I love it. Oh, I knew she was going to come strong with that answer. Spoken like a true grandma who gets saddled with the grandkids during the summer.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I think that's a great one. So I think I'm trying to think what I would do at the end of the summer. It's usually, I don't know, like I don't really have anything that I've at the end. My favorite end of summer activity is going and sitting, being able to sit outside and not be fucking so hot that I'm dead.
Except for the buzzy fuckers that are preventing that on the second and third floor currently.
Yeah.
Despite all best efforts.
Yes. Yeah, we're working with our maintenance folks on this. But
y'all, this dude showed up in a beekeeper suit. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Now, don't get me twisted. I don't blame this guy. I absolutely don't want to get stung. I don't want anyone else to get stung. And as we all know, yellow jackets are some of the meanest motherfuckers.
Well, they think these are carpenter bees, though.
No, they're not. Sir, let me tell you right fuck me now. A carpenter bee looks like a big-ass bumblebee. They about this big. They loud. They fat. No, them yellow jackets all day, day, if I ain't lying. It is a wasp or a yellow jacket all day. That is not a carpenter bee. Carpenter bees and them shits you see in the jars with the house looking thing. Yeah, no, they eat wood. I've experienced those. They like it a wood, but that's not a carpenter bee. I'll bet my life that is not.
Okay. Well, so I think we vamped long enough that we got a phone call.
Oh my goodness.
It's amazing how that works. So it is. You too can call 253-237-3321, much like this caller did.
You want to know my favorite end of summer activity is? It's the same shit I do all year round. I still go disc golfing. I still go camping. Whether it's winter, summer, fall, spring, whatever, it doesn't matter. The only thing that's really changed, so I guess it'll have to be my favorite, is the kids play soccer. So it is now soccer season, which is absolute chaos, but also really amazing to watch. I got the two girls playing soccer. Both of them played today. Brynja, her team lost something like 1-8, and then Freya's team won 8-0. So, a little lopsided there. All right, bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Bem. That, yeah, heck yeah. It's funny he said that because I was thinking something roughly alike. Like, there's not really a lot that changes between when it goes from summer to what people would call fall around here. We just call it a little cooler than summer because there's not really, there's two seasons, fucking hot and not so fucking hot in the South.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I guess if I had to pick a favorite end of summer activity, it would be, well, yeah, in my past life, it would be going to the high school football games and, you know, listening to my kids playing the band, but, not doing that anymore. So, but that's unfortunately that was, I guess, something funly I used to do, but that's as much as, you know.
The only high school football games I've ever been to are the ones that I participated in when I was in school. I have never externally attended a football game. Not that I don't want to, and we have actually spoken about the fact that at some point I would love to catch our local team just for something to do on a Friday night, but that would mean pissing off a 2.5 Benz or a rideshare radio, because that's what we do on Fridays starting at 9 Eastern, 8 Central.
Yeah, exactly. So, but in any case, yeah, I think we've, but yeah, so, but you haven't weighed in on your favorite end of summer activity yet.
I just did. There really isn't. There is nothing special that I do to mark the end of summer. Like, oh, I'm closing the pool. Oh, I'm having an end of summer barbecue. We don't do shit. We don't celebrate
about
shit.
About the only thing we do is watch football. That is pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. So I will call that my end of summer activity is I tune in to the National Football League and watch grown men grab each other's asses and smash each other in the face with a pigskin for the glory of a trophy named after some fucking football player. That is my end of summer activity, is starting the fall football season. Because in Casa Lotus, there are two seasons. Football season and the days until it's football season.
Pretty much. So, and that's certainly, I think that's, yeah, that was probably what, I guess probably the only end of fall activity that I liked as a kid was, yeah, the start of football season. So,
well, here's the thing. Living in the Northeast when they're actually, you know, where there actually is seasons, I used to enjoy kind of that feeling, the smell in the air, the rustling of the leaves that have started to fall. There's a sense of fall coming. That's what people think of when they think of fall mostly. They think of that smell. They think of the sound. They think of that little bite in the air when it gets to be the latter afternoon, closer to dinner. You know, that's when it's really fall. At least for me in the Northeast, that's how it was. Down here, like I said, you know, there's a YouTube video that's funny about, you know, fall in the South, because, you know, this chick takes a big canister of pumpkin spice and puts it in the center of her table, and she wraps a scarf around her neck, and she opens the door, and it's like 90 fucking degrees out, and she starts pouring sweat. And it's like, yeah, that is a really accurate depiction of what fall in the South is a big can of pumpkin spice, and you're sweating your nuts off in October and November because there's a random 80 or 90 degree week.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Well, all right. How about we go get high?
I think that's a great idea.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything, but I do not freebase cocaine.
Now, we don't freebase cocaine, but we'll smoke after the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, because, but, or, well, if we had the, well, I probably wouldn't.
You know what, I'm going to, after you introduce this, I have something to say.
Okay, so move over, booze. Weed drinks pulled in $1.1 billion in U.S. sales in 2024. I've got Pabst Blue
Ribbon on my mind. Yeah. I just want to point out, if we could get our hands on that product called Weed Water that has the terpenes in it, oh, you bet your ass. Oh, you betcha we'd be spending a lot of money, because that is one of the drinks that have the, you know, things in it that are legal here in our state that, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that was probably the only one of those products I've ever had that, first of all, didn't have a ton of sugar in it. Second of all, actually,
because the terpenes themselves are what you were tasting. Yeah. It wasn't sweetness. It was the sweet of the terpene naturally. And because, as you know, we have cannabinoid receptors in our brains naturally, it's a good choice.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, now the future of drinking is already here, and we've seen this in our own watering holes here. Forget the hangovers and sugar bombs. Americans spent more than $1.1 billion on THC infused drinks in 2024, according to a new report from Whitney Economics. And yeah, we have also seen this in our local stores here. What once looked like a stoner novelty is now a market carving out its own space at the bar, in the grocery aisle, and across culture.
But you know what's sad is that the alcohol industry is shaking in their britches over this fact. Why? As we've said a million times, there is room at the table for everyone. You have plenty of people who are perfectly fine with consuming alcoholic beverages, who believe the hype, the 1930 mumble propaganda that, oh, weed is the devil's lettuce and it's, you know, it leads to other drugs and, ooh, bad, bad, bad. So believe me, like I said, there's room for everybody on the shelf, at the bar, whatever.
That's right. So now, not long ago, weed drinks sat dusty in dispensary coolers, competing with gummies and vapes for a sliver of shelf space. Now, today, they're reshaping how Americans unwind. Now, Whitney's report estimates that the total U.S. market potential is at $9.9 to $14.9 billion, roughly 10% of alcohol sales. I think that's actually pretty conservative. For comparison, the U.S. energy drink sector is worth about $25 billion. So suddenly, the idea that cannabis drinks could rival Red Bull does not sound all that far-fetched, actually. So the shift was sparked by the 2018 Farm Bill, which decoupled hemp from marijuana and opens the door for hemp-derived THC beverages to flood mainstream channels. Then came the Minnesota effect, where lawmakers accidentally greenlit hemp THC seltzers in bars, liquor stores, and restaurants. The state racked up over $200 million in drink sales almost overnight, and other states took notice. Now, the stereotype of the heavy stoner pounding 100-gram milligram weed sodas in the shadows does not match reality. And according to the report, the core buyers are the female power shoppers, the ex-soccer mom demographic grabbing a four-pack of 5-milligram seltzers at the grocery store instead of a bottle of wine. Now, a proper stoner would probably need a six-pack just to get a buzz off of some of these products. But anyway, now Gen Z also plays a role. They're less interested in alcohol, more interested in cannabis, and they see THC drinks as a cleaner, lighter, and free of the baggage that comes with the booze. No calories, no hangover, no stigma.
They're not wrong, though. Think about it, okay? Back when you would drink and the many tangles that I've had with, you know, liquor in recent times, okay? I can get absolutely stoned like a gravel road. Wake up the next morning like, la 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 la, everything's fine, Snow White. If I get shit-faced, oh yeah, I'm like, don't talk to me, I don't want to know. Oh, shut up.
And that's why I usually offer you Ultrasalt.
Even with the Ultrasalt, though, phone boy, there are some times that when you get shit-faced, okay, that it just wrecks you. And I completely agree with the Gen Z in so much that you can enjoy those beverages and you can feel that elevated feeling while you're with your friends, you're out being social, and then the next morning you're not paying the piper. There's no hair of the dog involved in that transaction, so to speak. And again, you hear us talking all about the fact that you cannot overdose on marijuana. You can die from alcohol ingestion. You can literally drink yourself to death. It is impossible, with a capital I, to consume so much cannabis that you are risking death. It's not possible.
Yeah, well, you know that there are multiple types of cannabis, right?
I do. And honestly, we're going to tell you about five of those categories.
I've got information, man. New shit has come to light.
Goddamn too high. Goddamn too high. Goddamn too high.
Goddamn too high, because a chemotype refers to the plant's chemical profile, particularly the dominant cannabinoids it expresses. In cannabis, chemotypes are categorized into five primary groups. These classifications help breeders, scientists, and regulators differentiate between the types of cannabis, including hemp, based on the ratio of cannabinoids like THC, CBD, and emerging compounds such as CBG. Before exploring the chemotypes, it's essential to understand the legal and biochemical distinction between THC and THCA. THC, or delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, is the active intoxicating compound regulated under U.S. law. THCA, tetrahydrocannabinolic acid, is its acidic precursor. It's non-psychoactive in its native form and must be decarboxylated, or, you know, burned, typically through heat, to convert into active THC. You see why the THCA is such a problem flower-wise, folks? Or wax-wise or whatever? Because as soon as you turn the heat on with that, it becomes the psychoactive intoxicating compound THC. Now, under the 2018 Farm Bill, the legal definition of hemp is based on delta-9 THC content alone, specifically less than 0.3% THC by dry weight. We've talked about this, even how that number came to be. The law does not currently restrict THCA, even though it converts to THC when smoked, vaporized, or heated, what we talked about. This is why we say they accidentally legalized weed. But moving on. This distinction reflects a scientific fact about the molecule. As a result, cultivators that express high levels of THCA but remain under the 0.3% delta-9 THC are considered federally compliant hemp under the 2018 Farm Bill, although enforcement and definitions vary by state. At the biochemical level, all cannabinoid diversity begins with cannabigerolic. There's a word I've never seen before. We'll call it cannabigerolic acid, CBGA, often called the mother cannabinoid. Now, we have heard of this before. CBGA is the central precursor molecule that can be transformed by different enzymes into three major acidic cannabinoids, THCA, CBDA, and CBCA. Modern breeding leverages this knowledge to deliberately fix chemotype outcomes, whether the goal is a compliant type 3 CBD hemp or an emerging type 4 CBG variety. Now, are you ready for the five types? Well, here we go. You have THC dominant type 1, common use, adult use, and recreational varieties. The ratio is high THC, low CBD, often a 20 to 1 or higher ratio. This is the classic drug type cannabis. Cultivators like OG Kush, Gelato, Original Z, Lemon Tree, Haze, Skunk Number 1, Sour Diesel, and Blue Dream are example of plants bred for high THC content with very little CBD. Now, I will weigh in to tell you I've had several of those strains, and yabba-dabba-doo, they're pretty goddamn good. Now, these cultivators remain the backbone of much of the modern recreational cannabis culture and set the foundation for today's hybridized practices. Now, you have chemotype 2, which is balanced THC to CBD. The common use is medical. Ratio is about a 1 to 1. They have balanced chemotypes that are therapeutically versatile and favored by patients seeking the entourage of effects. Cultivators like Pennywise, I love that, Canatonic, and Stephen Hawking Kush. Come on, y'all. Stephen Hawking Kush. Can I get a little sum? That's a great name. They exemplify this category. These plants typically contain both THC and CBD in relatively equal amounts. They offer the psychoactivity tampered by the non-intoxicating effects, so you get the relief without the woo head. Now, you have chemotype 3, which is CBD dominant. The common uses are hemp, wellness products, low THC flower. It's a high CBD, low THC, under the 0.3 threshold. Now, these cultivators are bred to express high levels of cannabinol with minimal THC. And some of these are the workhorse of the hemp wellness boom. Fundamental examples like Charlotte's Web, ACDC, and Cherry Wine helped to establish this category and fueled the explosion of CBD-rich products in the marketplace. Now, you also have chemotype 4, which is the CBG dominant, which is emerging medical category. It has a negligible amount of THC and CBD, so it has not a lot of those, but it has a lot of the CBG. Of course, we talk about CBG, the cannabigerol, which is the mother cannabinoid, as we talked about being the precursor to THC, CBD, and CBC. It is a type 4 chemotype that results from selective breeding to prevent the conversion of CBG into downstream cannabinoids, leaving it as the dominant compound. Now, I don't know how they do that. Science, I would imagine. But apparently, it's pretty fucking good. The last type we have, of course, no surprise, chemotype 4, which is a null cannabinoid. It's usually used for industrial hemp for like fiber grain and biomass. So the textiles, things like that, it has absolutely no detectable cannabinoids. So there's just intoxicating
effect. That was the fifth type, the null cannabinoid. It sounds like a, It sounds like, anyway, but there, so.
Isn't that what I said was five?
You said four.
I'm sorry. I can't talk. Five. Chemotype five.
Yeah. 1, 2, 5.
Yeah. 1, 2, 5. 3, sir. 3.
Okay. Well, this is actually five.
It's basically the plants that are grown just for their stalk, seed, and herd. They produce virtually no cannabinoids, and they're used in textiles, building materials, and food production. This is great. This is where it all began, essentially, is the chemotype five, where it wasn't the intoxicating substance. It was the substance where they were making fibers and things, but the federal government can't keep their dick out of anything because, you know, it's all well and fine to have alcohol, completely legal, booming market, but God forbid we federally regulate a plant that has so many uses medically, recreationally, textily, the list goes on and on. We know why they won't. It's all about the money. But I digress.
Yeah. But well, I don't know that this. I think we've exceeded the higher consciousness segment. Now we need to go.
I think I got too high, and now I need to.
We need to go fuck some shit up in the tech segment.
Yeah, we do. We need to turn it on and off.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
Yeah, well, actually, this is one of those AI stories I was actually kind of happy to see. This Stanford computer science professor went to written exams 2 years ago because of AI, and he says it's because his students insisted on it.
I hope you're all taking notes because there's going to be a short quiz next period.
Yeah, so Stanford University's computer science professor Jure Leskovec is no stranger to rapid technological change. A machine learning researcher for nearly three decades and well into his second decade of teaching, he's also the co-founder of Kumo, a startup with a $37 million funding raise to date. Now, but 2 years ago, as the latest wave of artificial intelligence began reshaping education, Leskovec told Fortune he was rocked by the explosion of his field into the mainstream. He said Stanford has such a prestigious computer science program, he feels as if he sees the future as it's being born, or even before the future is born. But a public release of GPT-3 was jarring. We had a big, I don't know, existential crisis among students a few years back when it kind of wasn't clear what our role in the what our role is in this world, Leskovec said. And then he said, it seemed like breakthroughs in AI would be exponential to the point of it'll just do research for us. So what do we do? He said he spent a lot of time talking with students at the PhD level about how to organize themselves, even about what their role in the world would be going forward. And it was existential and surprising, he said. Then he received another surprise, a student-led request for a change in testing. There we go. It came out of the group, he said, especially the teaching assistants, the previous generation of computer science undergraduates. Their idea was simple. We do a paper exam. Leskovec, a prominent researcher at Stanford whose expertise lie in graph structured data and AI applications in biology, recounted the pivot with a mixture of surprise and thoughtfulness. Historically, his classes had relied on open book take-home exams where students could leverage textbooks and the internet. They couldn't use other people's code and solutions, but the rest was fair game. As large language models like OpenAI's GPT-3 and GPT-4 exploded onto the scene, students and teaching assistants alike began questioning whether assessments ought to be handled differently. Now, it's a lot more work for him and his TAs, he said, saying that these exams take much longer to grade, but they all agreed it was the best way to actually test student knowledge. The age of AI for Leskovec, an AI veteran, has surprised him by putting a higher workload back on himself and other humans. Besides there being fewer trees in the world from all the paper he's printing out, he said AI has just created additional work. There, you know, there we go, right? So his 400-person classes feel like an audience at a rock concert, but he insisted he's not turning to AI for help synthesizing and analyzing all the exams. No, we hand grade, he said. And
I love that.
Yes. And if you, the story talks about sort of, this is a big, long article. Actually, it's in Fortune, I think. But this article really, it talks about, you know, sort of, okay, what should, you know, in a world where AI can do certain things, what, you know, what role is there for humans to do things? And it kind of goes back and forth on the pros and cons of all of this. But I think I think this professor's got it correct. Look, we've had discussions behind the mic related to this, even with your own studies. And in fact, I'll even bring up the example, right? Now you're taking an A plus hardware class. It's a CompTIA thing that they do.
Yeah.
And you're getting into things like, you know, replacing a power supply.
And I can tell you on a simulator, this is an absolutely arduous task, because even as close in as you scan or magnify or whatever, you're still really struggling to figure out what the connector might be, especially for someone like me who've never really opened up the side panel of a PC and kind of dug around to see what the guts look like, the motherboard, the CPU, this, that, and the other thing. So I'm having to do this. I mean, it's driving Phoneboy nuts because he has an actual tower unit that he has to replace the power supply in. And he's looked at me and gone, ha ha, guess what? You're replacing that power supply. You are in that part of your education. I'm giving you a hands-on. I'm going to make you do this. And I appreciate him for that. Because I can assure you, the simulation on this makes me use a lot of four-letter words don't want to use.
Yeah, it makes me use a lot of four-letter words, too. It's terrible, and it has some stuff. And I see what they're trying to do. And honestly, given that they're doing it on a computer,
But here's the thing, okay? Because the chat is starting to light up a little bit about this AI and education thing. there's a reason why your girl is taking such a hard stand on this AI with her digital forensics class. In addition to the fact, I actually had a UT student who I was talking to about, she said, you know, when I write papers, I don't use ChatGPT and stuff. And all of my classmates are using it and the professor's allowing it. She said, and I feel like, you know, in comparison, my paper is, you know, lacking. And I said, oh, no, no, no. I said, let me tell you, sweetie, what your paper has above what those people who are using ChatGPT has, the language that model uses probably has a lot of redundant verbiage and adjective. Like, everything is excellent and cool and wow. At least your paper has humanity and personality. You can tell a real person wrote this paper versus a large language model. That is what sets you apart. Do not feel like you are losing ground because they're using ChatGPT. If anything, you are excelling.
Yes, because...
And that's the message I'm trying to send. And it's a very double-edged sword because I have to tuck that particular... I have to really tuck that in when I go into my in-person class because I don't want to create too much friction because arguably the majority of the people who I'm in class with are, first of all, they're younger than me, but I feel like they're completely bought in, like AI, rah, rah, rah. Like, oh my God. Even my professor is really leaning in the positive direction of AI to the point, as you've heard me say, that he wants to integrate it into one of our lessons and has made the statement, if you don't get on board with AI, you're going to get left behind. Guys, I'm okay being left behind if it means I don't give up my autonomy. I refuse to be teaching a large language model my bad behaviors so that it can... Oh, God, I can't. Just, I mean, you guys know I'm learning how to go into cybersecurity and you expect me to allow a machine who's infallible to do this shit and I'm supposed to trust it? Right. And I got a bridge in Brooklyn for sale for you folks too. Okay? Seriously.
Well, you know who has something for sale here, and I think this is this next story. I don't think you knew what you, when you pulled this story, you didn't know what you were getting into.
No, I admit I didn't, but this is the reason why Phone Boy said, oh, you should probably read this. I said, oh, fuck no. Everybody's going to get the raw, just cold read off this story, because what I thought this was not what it is. Because a massive leak shows how a Chinese company is exporting the Great Firewall to the world.
You are being watched. The government has a secret system, a machine that spies on you every hour of every day.
A leak of more than 100,000 documents shows that a little-known Chinese company has been quietly selling censorship systems seemingly modeled on the Great Firewall to governments around the world. Now, if you don't know what the Great Firewall is, I'm going to let Phoneboy explain it to you folks.
Yeah, so this is the system that the Chinese government uses to control their citizens as they access things on the internet. It is known for doing things like blocking VPNs or preventing access to sites that they don't want you to access.
It is censorship at the highest level.
Yes, and it's being done in telecom, so you basically can't avoid it. So
yeah, you're fucked all the way around. Yeah, have a nice day.
And so yeah, this is so yeah this you know, and you've, now you've got a company that's exporting this stuff. Tell me more.
So Gage Networks, a company founded in 2018 that counts the father of China's massive censorship infrastructure as one of its investors, styles itself as a network monitoring provider, offering business-grade cybersecurity tools to gain comprehensive visibility and minimize security risks, quote-unquote, for its customers. The document shows. In fact, researchers found that it's been operating a sophisticated system that allows users to monitor online information, block certain websites and VPN tools, and spy on specific individuals. Yeah! Researchers who reviewed the leaked material found that the company is able to package advanced surveillance capabilities into what amounts to a commercialized version of the Great Firewall, a wholesale solution with both hardware that can be installed in any telecom data center and software operated by local government officials. Because we need more government, you know, involvement, don't you know? The documents also discuss desired functions that the company's working on, such as cyber attack for hire. Yeah, we need that. And geofencing certain users. Absolutely. In case you don't know what geofencing is, yeah, you know what it is. It's GPS locating, longitude and latitude of where your shit is. You are very trackable, folks. The files, including Jira and Confluence entries, source code, and correspondence with a Chinese academic institution, mostly involve internal technical documentation, operation logs, and communications to solve issues and add functionalities. Great cover. Now, provided through an anonymous leak, the files were studied by a consortium of human rights and media organizations, including Amnesty International, Intersect Lab, Justice for Myanmar,
yeah.
Paper Trail Media, The Globe and Mail, The Tor Project. Now, what is The Tor Project? I have heard a lot about this. Professor.
They're the people behind the Tor browser, actually.
Ah, that's why, because we use the Tor browser. Okay. So, the Australian newspaper, Der Standard, and...
That's actually the Austrian newspaper.
Oh, I'm sorry, Austrian. My eyes put way too many consonants in there. The Austrian newspaper, Der Standard, and Follow the Money, which is the advice we give everybody when they ask why, follow the money. So, this is not like lawful interception that every country does, including Western democracies. It's a global digital research institution that came up with this. The woman in charge, Marla Rivera, she's a technical researcher at Intersect Lab. Now, they said, in addition to mass censorship, the system allows governments to target specific individuals based on their website activities, like having visited a certain domain. This is why you use like a Tor browser or Brave. But did I say that? Yeah, I did. The surveillance system, by the way, if you want to know how secure your browser is, go to coveryourtracks.eff. That's Echo Frank Frank. Yeah, it will do an analysis on your browser and let you know how much information about your browser, which I assure you, the more information they have on your browser, the more pinpointable you are. In this instance, folks, you do not want to be unique. Just a little tip. So the surveillance system that Jeej is selling gives so much power to the government that really nobody should have. This is very frightening. At the core of Jeej's offering is a gateway tool called Tengu Secure Gateway, TSG, designed to sit inside data centers, and it could be scaled to process the internet traffic of an entire country. Let that sink in for a second. An entire country, according to the documents that were revealed. Now, according to these researchers, every packet of internet traffic runs through it, where it can be scanned, filtered, or stopped outright. Besides monitoring the entire traffic, documents show that the system also allows setting up additional rules for specific users that it deems suspicious and collecting their network activities. Now, this Wired article goes into more detail about the capabilities of the product, which includes both focused and wide-scale data collection, blocking VPN traffic, individual location tracking and surveillance, and reputation scores, and even, are you ready for it? Malware injection. Great! Just what we fucking need. The motherfucking Chiners having more goddamn shitification abilities to fuck with local governments, and the local governments are going, yeah, give us more ways to track our citizens and strip them of their rights. Fuck you guys.
Fuck you!
Yeah, so... Yeah, like I said, you didn't know what you were getting into. But yes, this is, unfortunately, yes, this technology is now...
This is why I wanted to do this as a cold read, because I wanted the listeners to have a raw sight as to the rage over this particular thing. You know how I feel about the certain tools we have as ethical hackers in this industry. Now we've got this shit that, oh, yeah, because, and I love it. I actually had some folks from Maryland who I hyped our show to, who came in for the game. They're trying to get the fuck out. And they seem like they have some real red politic thinking. But we were talking about the fact that the, you know, Blow Jiden administration just let China fucking get all this intel on our country before he was like, Oh, yeah, you can shoot down the balloon. Well, by that fucking time there, Sleepy Joe, they had all the fucking information they needed. This is just another and another and another and another fucking way that China is literally infiltrating our country. And the more you turn your fucking eyes to it, the more you pretend it's not happening, you're more of the problem. Stop being part of the fucking problem. I think it's time to talk about some shit, aka junk.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Oh, okay. This is some fucking clickbait right here. Scientists believe they found a groundbreaking new energy source, and it's virtually unlimited.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics.
Yes, and plastics are definitely they're fucking everywhere. They are, and scientists are now trying to figure out how to do something with them, turn them back into a usable fuel source by heating it to very high temperatures, like 900 degrees Celsius, which is 1,652 degrees Fahrenheit. That's fucking hot. Now, they're doing this to break the plastic's polymer chains into hydrocarbon molecules, which are the basic molecule required for creating fuel energy. So
I'm curious how they're doing this.
Okay, the process is not efficient enough to be feasible at large scales, though. For the first time, scientists have discovered a promising method for creating the fuel, which only increased the efficiency marginally. Now, they've done nothing to account for the energy it takes to actually accomplish that, not to mention, where's all that heat going? Into the atmosphere? Creating yet more climate change?
So they can blame it on the cow farts?
Yeah, exactly. So if the current hurdles are overcome, then large-scale production of pyrolysis oil, which could supplement or even replace fossil fuels, essentially science hope. But what they're saying is if they can take a process that uses a lot of energy, because that's what the article basically talks about, is the fact that, yeah, I mean, how much energy does it take to heat something up to 900 degrees Celsius?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I would like to know just exactly what apparatus, if you will, is getting to that heat. That's insane.
Yeah, so they're basically saying, look, if we can take this process and make it somehow use, like, it sounds like EVs, right? They're saying, hey, EVs are great if we can figure out how to deal with the power generation issues. Well, yeah, that's part of the problem. You can't just have something that's completely untethered to the environment's ability to support it. You're creating this shit that, yeah, the environment. I think a better story would have been here. I think you found a story about I saw a story about the fact that they could break down plastic bottles in 8 weeks now with some process, right? There's something that are they?
I don't remember off the top of my
head. Okay, well, I think that would have been, of course, then my question is, okay, when you break it down, where does all the material, all that nasty shit go? Probably goes.
Well,
in the-
yeah, much like, okay, I'll break it down to a very basic scientific level of matter can neither be created nor destroyed. And that matter is transferred into heat. Where does all that heat go? Much like you said, goes into the atmosphere. Creates all the global warming
about. 900 degrees Celsius, that dissipates.
Think about the discharge off that.
Yeah, no shit. So these people are fucking nuts. I mean, that's pretty much
what
I got to
say. We knew that, though, phone boy.
Yeah, well, let's talk about let's go to the next story.
Here, this might actually be a little bit less nefarious because the first onshore wave energy product in the U.S. has launched in Los Angeles. Along a rocky wharf at the Port of LA on Tuesday, seven blue steel structures bobbed in the gentle wake of a Catalina Island ferry. The bouncing floaters marked a moment for clean energy, the first onshore wave power project in the country. The floaters belong to EcoWave Power, a Swedish company behind the pilot project located in at Altasea, a nonprofit ocean institute at the port. They harness the natural rise and fall of the ocean to create clean electricity 24 hours a day. The pilot project will generate a modest 100 kilowatts of power, enough for about 100 homes. But company officials said the ultimate goal is to install steel floaters along the port's 8-mile breakwater to generate about 60 kilowatts of power, or enough for about 60,000 homes. Now, I'm going to break in here and say, if this is actually something that they're successfully being able to do, we could literally see these blue squares bobbing up and down in all of the natural wake producing water bodies. And it's definitely clean energy. I mean, I'm not one of these tree hugging cunts, but I got to admit, this is pretty cool. Now, such an achievement could be replicated along other parts of the U.S. coastline, like I said. The U.S. Energy Information Administration estimates that wave power has the potential to provide more than 60% of the country's energy needs. Guys, that's a lot. Let's be real. The technology uses the bobbing floaters to compress pistons, which push hydraulic fluid into storage tanks located nearby on land. Okay, let's stop right there. I can already see an environmental issue if one of those hydraulic fluid pumps or lines, moreover, becomes breached. But anyway, as the pressure increases inside the tanks, it spins a motor, which turns a generator that makes clean electricity. Okay, sounds good. This is different from wave technology offshore, which can be more expensive to install, harder to repair, and more difficult to convert to a grid because it's farther from land. That makes sense. Capturing the energy at the shore enables eco wave power to create the expensive parts on dry land and avoid disturbing the seabed or marine environment. All right, keep talking. That sounds good. Unlike other renewables, such as wind and solar power, which can't produce electricity around the clock unless accompanied by batteries, wave energy is 24/7. He's not wrong. I like it so far. The 2-year pilot at the Port of LA is one of several efforts from Eco Wave Power, which is also pursuing projects in Taiwan, India, Portugal, and New Jersey. Okay, I just think it's funny that they literally listed New Jersey as like the end of that list. But anyway, it's already connected a wave energy product to the grid in Israel. Hey, that's kind of neat. Now, its total pipeline is more than 404 megawatts. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. But the question is, what are these bobbing floaters doing to the ocean itself, and what impacts will it have on the environment around them? Are they doing studies on that too? I mean, I highly doubt they are.
Yeah. And actually, there's something. Okay. So this is something actually, growing up in Hawaii in the late 80s and early 90s. So on the Big Island, they've been doing all kinds of experiments with geo. And when I was growing up there, they were doing geothermal experiments using the temperature difference between the seawater and the,
That's neat.
And so they're actually, and I actually looked it up because I was trying to remember. So they actually have the state of Hawaii uses it through the Puna geothermal venture, which is kind of in the eastern part of the island. And it is, and they generate Hawaii, the actual Hawaiian Electric Company actually generates like 10% of their power with that. And it's,
wow.
And it's actually, yeah, and it's doing, and it's again using sort of that temperature difference. And it's, you know, they've been.
See, I mean, there's plenty of ways that we can use our planet to renew energy and create energy that doesn't involve nuclear and hydroelectric. Even though I'm not opposed to hydroelectric, there are downsides to it. Like the fact that I know in Lenore City, there is a hydroelectric dam of which the roadway ran over top of for many years until they realized that, holy shit, this roadway is literally crumbling this fucking dam. And they had to divert traffic. It was about a 2 to 5 year project
to rebuild the
bridge that used to go across that dam that now circumvents it. You can still see the power. Yeah. You know, it's still a functioning hydroelectric dam, and, you know, you can see it from the roadway, sorta. But all in all, I understand that when it was built, there was not that massive amount of traffic there is now.
Yeah.
But there's still downsides to that particular type of energy. And I know Sir Bemrose has talked extensively about the positives of nuclear energy. I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, but I'm a lot more apprehensive, and I think the natural rise and fall of the tide producing energy as opposed to nuclear fission, uranium, etc. Yeah, I'm kind of feeling the natural sway.
Yeah, and also, you know, we talk about, you know, one of the things, you know, we talk about, you know, conservation. You know, okay, so tell me how using AI to do anything is conservationist in any stretch of the imagination.
Not when you think about how much power those data centers take.
Yeah, you know, there's a reason that, you know, you look at like a Raspberry Pi, right, or something. It has relatively a lot of computing power, and you could probably run it off batteries if you wanted to, right? I mean, that's, you know, so we're talking, you know, maybe instead of these big computers that require a lot of power, maybe a lot of smaller ones might do better, right? Although,
well,
you know,
don't forget about the computer that's trying to break quantum computing that's going to ruin all of us if it actually succeeds. No, you know, turn a blind eye to that and power usage.
Exactly. So,
or all the fucking EV cunts that are charging their Teslas that are killing the power grid. But again, don't look over here. Nothing to see.
Okay. Well, I think it's time for the last call. What do you think?
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh, God.
Yeah, time for the die.
It's time for the die saying, well, I've got two die stories. You actually don't. So my
no, because I took the high road this week.
Yes, well, the ones I found. Okay, so Supertramp lead singer dead at the age of 81. And you can guarantee I'll be playing that in Studio 33. This is Rick. So unfortunately, that was not Rick Davies singing. That was Roger Hodgson singing. But I figured I'd pull the iconic line because Rick Davies, the lead singer and co-founder of the British rock band Supertramp, passed away at 81 on Saturday after a decade-long battle with multiple myeloma, which is a type of blood cancer, the band announced on Monday. Born in Swindon, England in 1944, Davies, alongside Roger Hodgson, formed Supertramp in 1969, creating iconic hits like Goodbye Stranger and The Logical Song, which are all off the same album, which is probably
amazing.
That is pretty Breakfast in America is probably their best album. Let's just be honest about
that. I literally have it downloaded on my Apple podcast, or not music, Apple Music.
Yeah, there's a reason I own it on fucking vinyl. That's all I'm saying.
Good shit.
Okay, so let's get on to this next story you got.
Yeah, this one's a little more nefarious. It's not a die story, although these motherfuckers in China should die because the U.S. is warning that hidden radios may be embedded in solar-powered highway infrastructure.
China is asshole!
U.S. officials say solar-powered highway infrastructure, including chargers, roadside weather stations, and traffic cameras, should be scanned for the presence of rogue devices such as hidden radios secreted inside batteries and inverters. The advisory, disseminated last month by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Highway Administration, comes amid escalating government action over the presence of Chinese technology in America's transportation infrastructure. Holy shit, folks. Again, this is why we here at the Lotus Effect rant and rave over fuck China, fuck those little fucking bastards, fuck you, Blow Jiden, for letting that fucking balloon float over this country for so goddamn long. You were complicit. May you spin on a spit in hell and rot there for everything you fucking did, including pardoning Fauci. Fuck you, Blow Jiden.
Fuck you!
All right, with that, another die story here, I guess. Actress Polly Holiday passed away on Tuesday at the age of 88.
Kiss my grand!
Yes, so Polly Holiday, who's a Tony Award-nominated actor known for her iconic role as the sassy gum-chewing waitress Flo in the CBS sitcom Alice, passed away at 88 on Tuesday at her home in New York, as confirmed by her theatrical agent. Holiday was the last surviving principal cast member of Alice, which ran from 1976 to 1985. I watched my share of that goddamn show.
Oh my God, this literally, when Foamboy told me about this, I actually got a little tear. Because I loved me some Flo. That character was so iconic, so sassy. Just, I hope she rests peacefully and know that the lives that she touched with that character are vast, including my own.
Yeah, exactly. Well, although this story, I think, is actually, it's
perfect for me because college students are caught between AI gets you in trouble and AI is the future.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Given the rapid rise of AI, colleges still have a patch quilt of standards for what constitutes acceptable AI use and what's verboten. According to a Grammarly study, nearly 46% of students said they worried about getting in trouble for using AI. Meanwhile, as students engage with the real world and consider their career options, they feel like they're going to be left behind if they don't develop AI expertise. Much like I said, my professor said, especially as they complete internships where they're told as much, you know, to their faces. This is one of the reasons, y'all, I don't want a fucking internship. I do not want to be put in a position where I am forced to use artificial intelligence. I find it abjectly, oh, I can't find the words to express how offended I am, okay, that we are being forced, and I will say it, forced, in the computer science industry, the cybersecurity industry, every other industry that involves, we are being forced to integrate AI against our wills, against our better judgment, because the bean counters think it's a great idea. Where are those fucking bean counters going to be when the AI bubble bursts and it shits on all of us? They're going to be on a fucking island with Cayman bank accounts. They're not going to be the ones who have to worry about feeding their fucking families and paying their rent. They're going to be somewhere with a big-titted goddamn model that ain't their wife on a foreign fucking island with foreign fucking bank accounts when it all goes to shit. Man, I just can't. I swear to God, I just gotta go.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it, I gotta go.
Yeah, we gotta go. Like, the amount of rage that particular story, and I'm the one who pulled it in, brought to me with the way y'all know how I feel about AI, I can't. I'm
so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back, swoosh, and that's the game!
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.